injuries are minor, Thrawn said, easing carefully to a standing position.
Yeah?
Eli said, frowning at him. Thrawn's tunic was badly rumpled, and there were spots of oozing blood on both cheeks.
You sure?
It appears worse than it is, Thrawn assured him, gingerly touching one of his cheeks. Your assistance was most timely. Thank you. Eli felt his face warm with private shame. If the Chiss knew why he hadn't moved faster...
Sorry, I couldn't do more, he said. I was on the wrong side of the hedge, you know. I gather you heard them coming?
There is a particular tread all predators tend to use, Thrawn said, walking over to him. A balance between silence and speed. Humans use a version of this tread.
Ah.
Eli had already known that Chiss eyes were a bit better than those of humans, their visible spectrum edging a bit into the infrared. Apparently their ears were better too.
Thanks for getting me out of the way. I've had just enough training to know I'm not very good at this.
You are welcome. Thrawn looked at the approaching cadets, who had slowed to a jog now that the attackers were gone. And now, I believe, he added, it is finally time for us to see Commandant Deanlark. Chapter 6 A leader is responsible for those under his authority. That is the first rule of command. He is responsible for their safety, their provisions, their knowledge, and ultimately, their lives. Those whom he commands are in turn responsible for their behavior and their dedication to duty. Any who violates his trust must be disciplined for the good of the others. But such discipline is not always easy or straightforward. There are many factors, some of them beyond the commander's control. Sometimes, those complications involve personal relationships. Other times, it is the circumstances themselves that are difficult. There can also be politics and outside intervention. Failure to act always brings consequences. But sometimes, those consequences can be turned to one's advantage.
All right,
Commandant Deanlark said, as he made a final notation on his datapad. The skin around his eyes is puffy. Perhaps he is newly awakened. His facial heat is bright, and the muscles in his throat are tight. There is a thin coating of perspiration on his face. Perhaps he is nervous.
Cadets Orbar and Turoy set up the assault, you say. Did you actually hear them calling in the men who attacked you?
No, sir, we didn't, Vanto said. But their comlink records, or the lab's own comm system, should give you the necessary indicators.
Yes, they should,
Deanlark agreed. His voice goes deeper in tone. Reluctance?
Unless the assailants were an entirely separate bunch.
They were not, Thrawn said.
How do you know?
Deanlark asked. His eyes narrow. They came across the southwest corner of the parade ground, Thrawn said. At that time they were already moving with speed and stealth. But the only way for them to have independently identified us was with electro-binoculars.
Which none of them had, Banto said.
He nods, a gesture of understanding.
That also rules out an attack driven by jealousy or xenophobia, since they couldn't have known it was Cadet Thrawn. So it was Orbar or Turoy, or the instructor, he added.
His tone rises slightly with thoughtfulness.
No, Deanlark said. It wasn't him.
It could have been, Thrawn said.
I said it wasn't,
Deanlark repeated. His tone has gone deeper, his face stiff, his eyes gazing with heightened intent. Perhaps he does not wish it to be possible.
Bad enough that cadets were mixed up in something like this. We're not going to drag an instructor in, too.
He looks back at his datapad. His facial heat increases as he makes a final note.
Sir, with all due respect, I don't think politics should enter into this, Vanto said.
His tone is respectful but firm.
No, you don't, do you?
Dean Lark said.
His voice becomes harsh.
Are you ready to have your name put on a witness list?
I could handle it, sir.
I doubt that, cadet,
Dean Lark said.
Orbar's family has a lot to say about what happens on Coruscant. Even if they let you graduate, you'd probably find yourself assigned to some wild space listening post.
Is not such manipulation of the justice system in itself illegal? Thrawn asked.
Of course it is,
Dean Lark said.
His lips compress, his facial glow fading slowly.
All right. Assuming your assailants haven't figured out a way to bypass the comlink records, we should have their names by morning.
It will not be a long search, Thrawn said. They would not risk going outside their closest circle of friends. There are 8 other cadets who typically socialize with them, 2 of whom may be eliminated by considerations of aura.
Aura?
Issa Thimba.
Presence or aura, Vanto translated. The Sabisti term can refer to a person's height, weight, build, vocal quality, mannerisms, profession, and expertise, or some combination.
They're cadets,
Dean Lark said.
They don't have a profession.
All 10 are in the weapons engineering track of study, Thrawn said.
Yes, I suppose they are,
Dean Lark said.
Which leaves us 6 suspects.
All of them also from the same social level as Cadets Orbar and Turoy, I assume.
If you're suggesting I'm going to look the other way on this cadet, I strongly suggest you revise your thinking,
Dean Lark said.
His voice is harsh. His facial heat increased. Perhaps he is angry or feels guilt.
Yes, I'm concerned about the potential political fallout here. I've put up with Orbar's antics for almost 4 years because of it. 2 more months and he'll be someone else's problem. So yes, I'd like to see this go away. But I can't let this one slide. And I won't.
I'm gratified to hear that, Commandant, Thrawn said. Let me then suggest an alternative means of action. You will find our attackers, but you will not bring charges against them. Dean Lark's eyes narrow. His mouth opens slightly, in surprise.
You don't want them charged?
He asked.
And what the hell are we all doing here?
As I said, I want them found, Thrawn said. I then recommend they be transferred.
Dean Lark gave a snort of derision.
To where, Mustafar?
To starfighter pilot training. Dean Lark stares. His expression of surprise deepens.
Hardly what I'd consider a punishment.
It is not intended to be, Thrawn said. All 3 show the aptitude and aura necessary for fighter craft pilots.
Really?
Dean Lark leans back in his chair. He folds his arms across his chest.
I can't wait to hear this one.
It was obvious from their method of attack, Thrawn said. From the way they moved both together and singly. I do not have the words to properly explain it, but it was the mark of instinctive combat pilots.
Cadet Vanto?
Dean Lark gestures toward Vanto in an inviting manner.
Can you corroborate that?
Sorry, sir, Vanto said.
His expression is thoughtful.
But I wasn't concentrating on their tactics, and I doubt I would have seen what Cadet Thrawn's talking about even if I had.
Such an action would also carry an additional bonus, Thrawn said. The Royal Imperial Starfighter program is excellent, but I believe the program at the Sky Strike Academy is equally capable.
Nothing equal about it. Sky Strike's far better with pilots than we are,
Deanlark said. He sits up straighter in his chair. His frown fades away. He understands.
And there's no reason to tell Orbar and Turoy where their fellow conspirators have disappeared to, is there?
Not at all, sir, Thrawn agreed. In fact, I would suggest that the three begin their new training. He paused. Nigiko Tholu. Is there a word in Basic for that?
Yes, incommunicado, Vanto said. Can they be held incommunicado, Commandant?
On Sky Strike.
Deanlark makes a snorting sound.
It's hard not to be incommunicado there. And you're right. I imagine even Orbar might learn to behave himself after three of his co-conspirators disappear without a trace.
Uncertainties are often useful in paralyzing an opponent's plans and actions, Thrawn said. For a human like Cadet Orbar, who believes himself capable of handling all situations, this will also prove a useful lesson for his future. One can hope he will take it to his core and become a better person and officer.
Not sure I'd go that far, Deanlark said. Not with Orbar. But it's worth a shot. If you're sure you want to do it this way...
Allow me to state it more strongly, Thrawn said. If you bring the attackers to court-martial, I will not testify against them. Deanlark angles his head a few degrees to the side.
Is this how you do things in the unknown regions, cadet? Bypass the law and regulations and get what you want through blackmail or extortion?
We attempt to solve problems. This is the solution that is best for the Empire as a whole.
You have anything to add, cadet?
Deanlark asked.
He raises his eyebrows toward Vanto in question.
No, sir. Vanto said.
Deanlark shrugs his shoulders. Perhaps reluctant acceptance.
I'll get the process started, he said. Maybe give Skystrike's commandant a call. We'll have the guilty parties' names by morning, and their hindquarters off Coruscant by dinner.
He smiles. Perhaps sly amusement.
That should leave them just enough time to tell Orbar and Turoy they have no idea where they're going before they disappear. As you said, cadet, uncertainties.
Exactly, Thrawn said. Thank you, Commandant.
Don't thank me.
Deanlark's tone deepens.
Just be advised that if this thing blows up, your name will be right under mine on the hell to pay list.
He inhales deeply.
You're cleared for duty, both of you. Get back to the barracks and get some sleep. Dismissed.
Yes, sir, Vanto said as he stood up. Thank you, sir.
Thrawn and Vanto were again on the walkway before Vanto spoke again.
Interesting solution, he commented.
His voice is thoughtful.
I'm a little surprised Deanlark went for it.
I am not, Thrawn said. Did you observe the flat sculpt on the left side wall?
Yes, I think so, Vanto said.
He frowns, and his voice becomes more hesitant. He is focusing his memory.
The one with ocean waves and sailing ship? The sailing warship, yes, Thrawn said. It is a highly valuable work of art, worth far more than a man of Commandant Deanlock's position could afford.
I doubt it is, Vanto said. It's probably part of the office decor.
And yet still too valuable for even the Academy to purchase, Thrawn said. I conclude, therefore, it was a gift from one or more of Coruscant's powerful families.
Meaning? Vanto said.
His posture straightens abruptly as he understands.
Meaning that Deanlark knows Royal Imperial is beholden to the families. Meaning, in turn, that he would jump at any chance to avoid a public confrontation.
Beholden?
Ubu Pahaka.
Ah, Thrawn said. Yes, that is indeed Commandant Deanlark's position. That was why he so readily accepted my plan. Odd that these comlinks do not have a preset emergency signal.
What?
Vanto frowns in surprise or confusion.
Chiscoms have an emergency button, Thrawn said. It allows for aid to be summoned quickly. Yeah, that could be useful, Vanto agreed. You've got them on civilian comms, but not military comlinks. Probably needed the space for all the extra encryption chips to make sure no one's eavesdropping on official chatter.
It would also be useful to arrange the comlinks so that one would not need to draw them from belt or pocket.
That would definitely be handy.
Vanto gestures to the lieutenant's rank plaque.
Maybe you could put it inside the rank plaque. At least you wouldn't have to worry about dropping it.
Could that be done?
What? Put a comlink in the rank plaque? Sure. You'd just have to hollow out the towels from behind. Plenty of room in there for a comlink's worth of electronics.
His eyes narrow in further thought.
Though, on second thought, you might not have enough room for all the encryption chips. Probably couldn't squeeze in enough battery power for long-range use, either.
It would only function aboard ship, then.
Right. Vanto said. Which means you still have to carry a long-range version for off-ship use.
He sighs in resignation.
I guess there's a reason why people do things the way they do.
Sometimes, Thrawn said. Not always.
I suppose, Vanto said.
His tone is thoughtful.
Could you really tell they would be good starfighter pilots? Or is that just a way to get them kicked out of Royal Imperial?
I could really tell, Thrawn said. You could not?
Not even close.
He is silent for three more steps. His forehead is creased in a frown.
Still doesn't address the fact that they attacked you, you know. You're just going to let them get away with that?
Your question assumes they will suffer no punishments, Thrawn said. On the contrary, they will spend tomorrow knowing their deeds are laid bare and wondering what fate Commandant Deanlark has planned for them. They will journey to Skystrike, bearing the same fear and uncertainty.
Ah, Vanto said. I see where you're going. Even once they're there, they'll never be sure they won't be hauled out of bed in the middle of the night and brought back to Coruscant for trial.
That fear will eventually fade, Thrawn said. But not for a considerable time.
I suppose not, Vanto said. So they get to walk on eggshells for a few months. Orbar gets to do the same. And Deanlark doesn't have to face Orbar's family.
You also will not need to face that same pressure.
I wondered if you'd been thinking about that, Vanto said. So justice is served. Sort of. And everyone else comes out ahead. What we call a win-win.
He points at Thrawn's face.
Except you.
My injuries are minor, and will heal. I have endured worse.
I'll bet you have.
Vanto is silent for another few steps.
So is this what the Chiss leaders have to look forward to?
I do not understand.
this kind of justice, Vanto said. Retribution for exiling you. The stories say the Chiss never forget injuries that have been done to them.
Your stories assume that memory necessarily leads to vengeance, Thrawn said. That is not always the case. Situations change. Reasons and motivations change. No, I seek no retribution.
Really? Because it looks to me like they deserve it.
They had reasons for my exile.
The preemptive strike thing? Vanto asked.
His tone is curious but cautious. He sees information within his grasp, but fears to chase it away.
What happened, anyway? Did you let someone strike get through the Chiss lines?
No, Thrawn said. I launched a strike of my own.
Who was it against?
Evil, Thrawn said. Nomadic pirates who preyed on defenseless worlds. I deemed it dishonorable for the Chiss Ascendancy to stand unmoving and not assist the helpless.
Did you beat them?
Yes, Thrawn said. But my leaders were unhappy.
Sounds pretty ungrateful, Vanto said.
His voice is firm, without uncertainty.
Also pretty stupid. Pirates like that would have turned on your people sooner or later. What then?
Then we would have fought, Thrawn said. But then we would have been the victims.
And you can't fight until that happens?
That is the Ascendancy's current military doctrine. Vanto shakes his head.
It's still unfair.
Sometimes a commander's decisions must be made without regard for how they will be perceived, Thrawn said. What matters is that the commander does what is necessary for victory.
Yeah, Vanto said. Lucky for me, I'm on track for a supply officer position. I'll never have to worry about that.
Yes, Thrawn said. Perhaps.
Now watch, Arinda said, pointing to the discolored spot where the conduit entered the apartment wall. Okay, Daisy, turn it on.
From the other room came the sound of the restroom water being turned on. A moment later, a small spray of water spurted from the spot.
A water leak?
Chesna Breaker growled.
You dragged me all the way down here for a water leak?
It's your building, Arinda reminded her calmly. Your maintenance people kept stalling her off, and I couldn't get anyone in your office to take this seriously.
So like a little girl who skinned a knee, you go crying to some bureaucrat in the housing department and get him to issue an order for me to drop everything and come down here?
Your government lease says your company is responsible for repairs, Arinda said. You own the company that owns this apartment block. That makes you ultimately responsible. If your people won't obey the law, I guess it'll have to be you personally.
Breaker said, eyeing her venomously.
Come over here a minute.
She turned and crossed to the window and looked out across the massive planet-wide city that was Coruscant. Frowning, Arinda followed.
You see that?
Breaker asked when the two women were once again standing together.
Out there are the little people you're representing so proudly. You know what they're going to do if you ever get in trouble and need help?
No. What?
Absolutely nothing, Breaker said. You'll be as forgotten as yesterday's breakfast.
She tapped her chest.
I'm the one you want to impress, Ms. Price. Men and women like me. Not Daisy What's-Her-Name out there. We're the ones with the power to make or break you. You'd be well advised to remember that.
I appreciate your concern for my well-being, Arinda said. But I already have a friend in high places.
Who? Senator Ranking?
Breaker snorted.
You go ahead and believe that if you want. You're just the latest in a long line of people he's dropped in a dead-end job and left to rot.
I'll keep that in mind, Arinda said. In the meantime, you have some repairs to make, and I have 57 more apartment doors to knock on. As long as I'm here, I might as well see what else is wrong with this place.
Don't bother, Breaker growled. I'll have one of my people, one of my little people, check into tenants' complaints. We'll have it all finished by the end of next week.
I'll hold you to that, Ms. Breaker. Good day.
10 minutes later, Arinda was in her air car, buzzing her way across the Coruscant sky, along with millions of other vehicles. A month ago, she mused, she would have been terrified by the traffic flow. Now she barely noticed it. Just a month ago, she might have agreed with Breaker's suggestion that Ranking had stuck her here in order to get rid of her. For the first 2 months, the senator had talked to her maybe twice, for no more than 3 minutes at a time. It had very much looked like he'd forgotten about her. That was about to change. Very, very soon. Her comm chimed, and she pulled it out. The ID said Senator Ranking. She smiled tightly. Very soon, or possibly right now. Arinda Price, she said.
Senator Ranking, Ms. Price,
Ranking said over the comm.
How are things going?
Very well, Senator, thank you, Arinda said. I've just taken another landlord to task for failing her responsibilities to her tenants.
So I hear,
Ranking said, his voice going a little brittle.
I just heard from Counselor Janna, who just heard from Ms. Breaker. You're causing a real stir down there.
Just doing my job, Senator, Arinda said, smiling to herself.
So her little one-woman crusade against corruption and indifference was finally drawing the right kind of attention.
I hope you and Counselor Janna aren't suggesting I ignore Coruscant laws and regulations.
No, of course not,
Ranking assured her.
Because the Lothal citizens I'm serving certainly seem happy with our progress, Arinda continued. And that is the reason I'm here.
Of course. You're doing a very effective job, which is actually why I called. As you may know, with so many people living on Coruscant, the usual array of government services has been badly strained for many years. A new program has been initiated that encourages senators to set up and fund, of course, supplementary citizen assistance offices across the planet.
Offices open to all Coruscant citizens? Not just that senator's own transient citizens?
Exactly. I have 4 such offices, and I'm about to open a 5th in the Bartanish 4 sector. It's occurred to me that you're the perfect person to run it.
Really?
Arinda breathed, putting some schoolgirl excitement into her voice, even as she sent a cynical smile toward the traffic flow outside.
That would be wonderful. When would I start?
As soon as you close your office for the day. I'll have someone else reopen it next week. Clear out your apartment and move everything to Bartanish 4. The office there is ready, and I've got an apartment reserved for you 2 and 6 away.
That sounds great,
Arinda said. 2 blocks and 6 levels would put her within perfect walking distance.
I'll head back to the office and get things started right away.
Good. I'll send you both the office and apartment addresses. Let me know when you'll be arriving, and I'll have someone meet you with the various keys, all right?
Sounds perfect,
Arinda said.
Thank you again.
No thanks needed. You've earned it. Take care.
The connection clicked off. Arinda put the comm away, smiling again. Ranking didn't mind her annoying the relatively rich and powerful. He just didn't want her activities so closely identified with him. In an anonymous assistance office, with no obvious connection to Ranking,
she could make all the waves she wanted without nearly so much political blowback. From Ranking's point of view, it had a couple of nice advantages. Arinda would continue to stir Coruscant's sludge, possibly digging up leverage points against local movers and shakers that Ranking could use in the future. At the same time, her new position would hopefully keep her too occupied to worry about the mine she'd lost to the Empire. What Ranking probably didn't realize was that it was just as much a win-win for Arinda, which was why she'd worked so hard to land this exact job ever since hearing about the project a few weeks earlier. Dealing with actual Coruscant citizens instead of Lothal expatriates would move her a modest step up the social ladder. And in Bartonish IV, she would also move several steps physically closer to the all-powerful federal district. Small steps, to be sure, but if there was one thing her parents had impressed upon her, it was that the best path didn't have to be quick, as long as it was correct. And Arinda was in no hurry. No hurry at all. Suddenly, almost before Eli knew it, it was over.
"Congratulations, son,"
his father said, gripping his hand tightly.
"Thanks, Dad," Eli said.
But despite the smiles and cheerful words, he could sense an unexpected reserve lurking behind his father's eyes. His mother's concerns were even more visible. It wasn't hard to figure out the reason. Every glance at the Coruscant skyline, every lingering look at one of the other freshly minted ensigns, every lowering of their voices whenever someone nearby might hear, all of it pointed to the fact that a wild space cadet like Eli should never have been at Royal Imperial in the first place. And then, there was Thrawn.
"You're sure he's okay?"
his mother asked as they walked along one of the garden patches leading back to the barracks.
"Because if the stories about the Chiss are right..."
She trailed off.
"They aren't, Mom," Eli assured her. "At least, not the ones you're thinking about."
"How do you know which ones I'm thinking about?"
"The ones about cunning and cruel vindictiveness," Eli said. "If they were, a lot of the cadets you're looking at would never have survived long enough to graduate."
He winced as the last words left his mouth. Probably not the best way he could have put that.
"He's okay," he assured them.
"Really? Very smart."
"So that part of the stories is true?"
his father put in.
"Yes," Eli said. "Let's not talk about him, okay?"
"Fine,"
his father said.
"Let's talk about you. What happens now that you're off your career track?"
"Who says I'm off it?" Eli countered. "Up until I came here, that was the bulk of my training. As far as I know, that's still where I am."
"Well, I hope so,"
his father said.
You never know about core world nonsense."
Eli suppressed a sigh. After all he'd put up with at Royal Imperial. But then, that was the way of things.
"And hanging around that Chiss might have affected things, too,"
his mother added.
"I didn't have any choice, Mom,"
he once again explained as patiently as he could. No matter how far down the social scale a person was, he added sourly to himself, there was always someone lower.
"I was assigned to him as his translator."
"Well, hopefully that's over now,"
his father said.
"When do you get your ship assignment?"
"Later today," Eli said. "And it might be a ground assignment, not a ship."
"It'll be a ship, dear,"
his mother said, patting his arm.
"You come from a family of voyagers, and you're good with numbers. They'd be silly to put you on a base."
"Sure," Eli said. Though now that he had a better understanding of Navy logistics, he knew that being good with numbers might be the perfect reason for them to put him at a base or supply depot.
"And we have to get going,"
his father said suddenly. Eli frowned, looking at him. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw Thrawn approaching at a brisk walk, as his father had apparently also noted.
Always someone lower.
You really don't have to, he said. If he can stay another day, or even another few hours, we can find out my assignment together.
We have to go, his father said, fumbling in his tunic. We have to... Damn.
And then it was too late.
Good afternoon,
Thrawn said, as he joined their little group.
You are Ensign Vanto's parents, of course. Welcome to Coruscant.
Thank you,
Eli's father said, his voice a little strained.
You are,
I am Lieutenant Thrawn, Thrawn said. Your son has done quite well. You should be very proud of him.
We are,
Eli's mother said. Her voice was less strained than her husband's, but the blatant curiosity in her face more than made up for it.
You're really a Chiss?
I am, Thrawn confirmed. Your son has spoken of your legends concerning us. Be aware that not all of them are accurate.
But some of them are?
Eli's father asked carefully.
May I ask which ones?
The head?
Eli admonished him, feeling his face warming.
The most flattering ones, of course, Thrawn said, a small smile touching his lips. Still, even when false, legends can be most informative.
I thought you said they weren't all true,
Eli's mother said.
I did not refer to the legends themselves, Thrawn said, turning his glowing eyes on her. But what is remembered says a great deal about those doing the remembering.
For a moment, an awkward silence surrounded the group.
I see,
Eli's father said at last.
Very interesting. But as I was saying, we have to go.
What was the problem?
Eli asked.
The problem?
He said, damn. That usually implies a problem.
Oh,
his father said.
No, not really. I'd just forgotten we can't use our beck and call here, that's all. We'll have to get an Airbus to our landing platform.
Which they charge an arm and a leg for,
his mother added.
But we'll be fine. We need to get back home anyway.
She stepped close to Eli and wrapped him in a big hug.
Thank you for inviting us here, Eli. Let us know where they put you, and take care.
I will, Mom,
Eli promised as his father wrapped his arms around them both.
Have a safe trip back.
We will,
his father said.
Goodbye. Take care.
He released his hug.
Lieutenant,
he said, nodding gingerly at Thrawn. Mr. Vanto, Thrawn said, returning the nod. Miss Vanto, safe journeys.
Thank you.
Eli's father took his mother's arm and led her away. For a moment, Eli and Thrawn stood in silence, watching as his parents walked down the path toward the Academy's landing platform.
They are concerned about you, Thrawn said at last.
Parents' prerogative,
Eli said, wondering uncomfortably how much Thrawn had been able to read from his brief encounters with them. Had he figured out that a major part of their concern was that Thrawn's presence in Eli's life might somehow have poisoned his future?
They're also not all that comfortable here. Big city, core people, you know.
Yes, Thrawn said. Your father spoke of a beck and call. What is that?
It's a device that can remotely bring your ship to you,
Eli said.
All my family's business ships are slave-rigged for beck and calls. With some of our clients, it's a good idea to keep your ship and the rest of your cargo out of sight and reach until you've finished your deal.
Because of the potential for theft?
Basically.
Why does the Empire not suppress such criminal activity?
Because they can't be everywhere, Eli said. And Wild Space isn't exactly high on Coruscant's list.
He nodded at the lieutenant's rank plaque, now attached prominently to Thrawn's tunic.
So is that a new plaque Dean Lark gave you at the ceremony? Or did you give him back the old one beforehand?
This one is new, Thrawn said, rubbing his fingertips gently across the tiles. Evidently he forgot he had already given me one.
Ah, Eli said, nodding. I guess you can keep the other one as a souvenir.
Or find another use for it, Thrawn said. When will we learn our assignments?
Eli checked his chrono.
Could be any time now.
He looked back at his departing parents, now nearly lost among the rest of the family members who'd gathered for the graduation ceremonies.
Might as well head over to the Commandant's office and see.
Very well, Thrawn said. Why do they not simply send us the assignments on our computers?
I don't know,
Eli said. Turning his back on the other cadets and their well-wishers, he headed toward the Commandant's office.
Probably want to get us used to handling properly encrypted data and orders. Or it's the way they've always done things. Take your pick. Come on. Good chance we'll be the first ones in line.
They weren't the first, but they were the second and third. Eli gazed at his data card as he and Thrawn walked past the line of graduates now starting to form, his eyes lingering on the Royal Imperial Academy logo. A new trickle of satisfaction running through his disappointment at his parents' abrupt departure. They might not think much of his transfer to Coruscant, but everyone else in the Navy would. He'd done it. He'd really and truly done it. Against all odds, the wild space yokel had been thrown into the elite of Coruscant and had succeeded.
Well, Thrawn prompted.
You first.
Eli said, and as his time at Royal Imperial was coming to an end, so was his time with Thrawn. It had been interesting, but he was ready to move on.
Very well.
Thrawn slipped his card into his datapad and peered at the display.
Interesting. I am to be second weapons officer aboard the Gozanti-class cruiser Bloodcrow.
Nice,
Eli said. Gozantis were Corellian design, about 64 meters long with dorsal and ventral laser turrets. They were a bit old, most were of pre-Clone Wars manufacture, but they could still hold their own alongside newer ships. Most were being used as freighters or evac ships, but some were being retrofitted with external clamps to carry starfighters or walkers, which would bring them into the front lines against pirates, smugglers, and slavers. In any role, though, a Gozanti was a good, solid ship from which to launch a career.
And you? Thrawn asked. I presume you asked for a supply officer position.
I did,
Eli confirmed, as he inserted his own data card.
Good chance I got it, too. The bigger ships are always hurting for a supply person.
Now,
he trailed off.
What the hell?
What is it?
Thrawn asked.
It took Eli 2 tries to find his voice.
The Blood Crow,
he choked out.
Lieutenant Thrawn.
He looked up at Thrawn, a red haze of anger dropping over his vision.
Did you do this?
He demanded.
Thrawn shook his head.
No.
Don't lie, Eli snarled. Lieutenants don't get AIDS, ever. You set this up with the Emperor, didn't you?
The Emperor does not speak to me, Thrawn said. Nor have I spoken with him since my first day on this world.
This didn't happen by accident, Eli ground out. You must have said something. What was it? What was it?
Thrawn hesitated, then lowered his head.
The Blood Crow is scheduled for duty in border sectors where Sibisti and related trade languages may be spoken,
he said reluctantly.
I merely pointed out that it might be beneficial to have 2 officers aboard who understood those languages.
Since they aren't programmed into translator droids, Eli bit out, an acid taste in his mouth.
But I assure you I said nothing about an aid.
Thrawn insisted.
If you wish, I will refuse to accept you in that position.
Eli looked down at his data pad, feeling the anger drain out of him. The anger and the excitement of graduation. Thrawn could refuse, ask or demand all he wanted. It wouldn't do any good. Once orders were logged into the Navy data system, they might as well be laser-etched into granite. So that was that. In a single stroke, Eli's life had been completely upended. Again. Only now, it wasn't just his schooling. This time it was his career. So carefully calculated and implemented that had been snatched away from him. He would enter the Navy not as an up-and-coming supply officer, but as an officer's aide. The career path most solidly guaranteed to go nowhere. And that assumed that Thrawn was even up-and-coming himself. What if he wasn't? What if he failed?
Because he might. In fact, the odds were high that he would. Disrespect for non-humans might not be official policy, but it nonetheless quietly pervaded the Navy.
Thrawn would have to try twice as hard as anyone else, and succeed twice as often just to stay even with them. And when Thrawn went down, it was almost guaranteed that anyone associated with him would go down too.
Ensign Vanto, Thrawn prompted. Shall I speak with the Commandant?
No point,
Eli said, shutting down the data pad and putting it away.
The Navy doesn't change orders just because junior officers don't like them. When you're an admiral, we'll see what you can do.
I understand, Thrawn said quietly. Very well. I shall strive to achieve that rank as quickly as possible.
Eli looked sharply at him. Was the damn Chiss mocking him? But there was no hint of amusement in his face. Thrawn was deadly serious. A shiver ran up Eli's back. The ghosts of the old stories whispering through his mind.
Chiss didn't make idle boasts or promises. And once they set their minds to something, they succeeded or died in the attempt. Maybe he really thought he could make admiral someday.
Maybe he was right.
I'll look forward to it, Eli said.
Come on. The order's said to be on the Corellia transport at 1800 hours. We don't want to start our careers by missing our ride.
Chapter 7.
There is satisfaction in defeating an enemy, but one must never allow oneself to become complacent. There are always more enemies to be identified, faced, and vanquished. All warriors understand the need to face and defeat the enemy. Both aspects of the task can be challenging. Both can require thought, insight, and planning. Failures in any of those areas can cost unnecessary time and irreplaceable lives. But a warrior may forget that even the task of identifying the enemy can be difficult. And the cost of that failure can lead to catastrophe.
Eli had occasionally warned Thrawn of the presence of politics within the Navy. They'd certainly seen evidence of that influence during the Orbar incident. Now, once again, politics had arisen that could directly affect them.
I wasn't able to get anything on why Captain Virgilio was replaced,
Eli murmured, as they followed the procession of officers escorting the new commander, Captain Filia Rossi, on her tour of the Blood Crow.
But everyone agrees that Rossi's very well connected. Nowadays, that's all you need to get a command.
I see, Thrawn said.
Eli grimaced. I see. That was Thrawn's go-to answer when he didn't want to say anything else. There was certainly plenty that he could say.
Starting with the kind of Captain Rick Virgilio had been.
He'd been excellent at his job, walking the necessary balance between standing orders and flexibility. In the 18 months Eli and Thrawn had served under him,
the captain had built up a fine reputation for trapping smugglers, rendering aid to distressed vessels, and defusing potentially damaging political situations on Midrim and Outer Rim worlds. He'd earned the respect of his officers and crew, and highly satisfactory reviews from the governors and other political leaders with whom he'd interacted. Equally important, certainly from Eli's and Thrawn's point of view, Virgilio had taken in stride the presence of an alien officer on his ship. There had been a degree of tension during the first few weeks as Virgilio tested the limits of Thrawn's intelligence, knowledge, and ability. But once the captain learned his new officer's parameters, Eli could detect no difference in the captain's treatment or acceptance of his second weapons officer. When the position of first weapons officer opened up, he'd raised no objections to Thrawn being promoted to that position. In fact, ship's gossip had suggested that Virgilio might have actually recommended the Chiss for the job. Now, without warning or explanation, Virgilio had been removed from the Blood Crow, and a younger, less experienced captain brought in. There was little that Eli had been able to learn about the new captain. Filia Rossi had graduated from the Wraithall Academy 12 years earlier, and had spent most of her time since then on Socorro, first on the ground, then aboard an orbiting defense platform out in the system's asteroid belts. For the past year, she'd been first officer aboard an ore freighter escort. Now suddenly, she'd been promoted to command of a cruiser. It seemed obvious that the decision had been based on politics and influence rather than merit or even seniority. Still, Eli was willing to give Rossi the benefit of the doubt. It was possible that the driving force was less political status than the simple result of personnel transfers. If Captain Virgilio had been promoted to a better, more prestigious command, then someone else had to be brought to the Blood Crow to take his place. But if that was the case, news of Virgilio's promotion had not been passed to the Blood Crow's other officers. Such silence from the high command lent additional weight to Eli's suspicions that the former captain had been retired or even quietly dismissed. Still, there must necessarily be a first command in every officer's career, Thrawn said into Eli's thoughts. I suppose, Eli conceded. I just don't see why her first command has to be on our ship. Ahead, the captain and the short line of officers trailing behind her had reached the number 2 storage bay. The captain hit the hatch release and stepped inside. First Officer Nels Daland close behind her. Eli winced. Uh-oh, he murmured. The rest of the officers knew what it meant, too. They began drifting to both sides of the passageway, making room for Thrawn to pass when the expected call came. The wait was barely 10 seconds.
Thrawn!
The captain's voice boomed from inside the storage bay.
Get in here now!
Captain Rossi and Senior Lieutenant Daland stood at one side of the storage bay.
Rossi's facial glow is increasing. Her eyes narrowed in a frown. Daland stands motionless, his face showing a partially masked expression of discomfort.
Senior Lieutenant Daland tells me this is yours,
Rossi said, pointing at the equipment stacked along the bulkhead.
It is, Captain.
You mind telling me what the hell it's doing taking up space on my ship?
He found it in a scrap market we were investigating for smuggler activity,
Daland put in.
As I mentioned earlier,
Your name, Lieutenant Thrawn?
Rossi cut him off.
Her facial glow increases. Her stance is stiff, her fingers moving slightly.
No, ma'am.
Then shut it! I asked you a question, Lieutenant.
As Senior Lieutenant Daland said, the parts were in a scrap market, Thrawn said. They are antiques, remnants of the Clone War.
I know what they are,
Rossi growled, looking at the piles again.
Droidica, buzz droid, 2 buzz droids, half a scap.
Her eyes narrowed.
Is that part of a hyperdrive ring?
Yes, ma'am.
These aren't antiques, Lieutenant.
Rossi snorts, her lips curling down briefly.
These are junk.
Perhaps, ma'am, Thrawn said. However, as I am not fully familiar with the technology of that era, I hope to gain insight by studying them.
And maybe get them working again?
Rossi asked.
Don't deny it. I can see fill-ins on both buzz droids. Brand new components.
She raises her eyebrows. Her finger movements intensify briefly.
They'd better not be components from the Bloodcrow stores.
No, ma'am, Thrawn said. They were purchased elsewhere.
At his own expense,
Daylan murmured.
Senior Lieutenant Daylan is correct, Thrawn said. The buzz droids in particular struck me as potentially useful. They are compact, with specialized drilling and cutting tools that allow them to...
Spare me the lecture!
Rossi cut him off.
Her hand makes an abbreviated slash through the air. The pitch of her voice lowers.
You may have read about the Clone Wars, but some of us lived it. And Virgilio just let you bring this stuff aboard?
Captain Virgilio permitted me to purchase them. Yes, ma'am, Thrawn said. He also gave me permission to store them here when I was not working on them.
Very generous of him, Rossi said. It may have caught your attention that Virgilio isn't captain anymore. I am, and I run a clean ship. I want this garbage dumped before your next watch. Clear?
Beside her, Daylan stirred.
His stance indicates disagreement.
Ma'am, if I might suggest...
I ask if that was clear, Lieutenant.
Yes, Captain, Thrawn said. May I offer an alternative?
If I didn't want to hear from my first officer, what makes you think I want to hear from you?
Rossi countered.
Senior Lieutenant Dayland, you'll see that he dumps it as ordered. We're done here.
Yes, ma'am.
Dayland remains standing where he is, making no indication of preparing to leave the bay.
With your permission, ma'am, I'd like to hear Lieutenant Thrawn's suggestion.
Captain Rossi's eyes narrow further as she stares at Daylan. Her arms are stiff beneath the uniform sleeves, her fingers now motionless, her stance leaning slightly forward. Senior Lieutenant Daylan's expression is tense, but his stance indicates firmness. Captain Rossi straightens slightly.
Apparently, no one aboard understands proper respect for their captain,
she said, her voice stiff.
We'll have to deal with that.
She turned back to Thrawn.
Fine. Let's hear this alternative.
It is my understanding, ma'am, that material aboard an Imperial war vessel is the property of that vessel, and thus under control of the commander, Thrawn said. When I bought these items for 500 credits...
500 credits?
Rossi interrupted.
Are you serious? Those things aren't worth a tenth that.
That would be correct, Captain. Were these standard buzz droids?
Thrawn said.
But they are of the Mark I version. Quite rare. And apparently quite valuable.
Really?
Rossi looks at the buzz droids, her lips pursing.
How valuable?
When I bought them, they were non-functional, Thrawn said. As you have noted, I have made some progress in repairing them. I would expect that once they are fully restored, they will be quite valuable to collectors.
Collectors?
Rossi's tone is flat.
People with more money than brains.
Some also merely have an interest in Clone War antiquities, Thrawn said. I'm told there are members of the High Command with some...